I have 18 pages here. Where'd I leave my other text here? The history of music, 3000 BCE until 2016 CE. BCE, that's before the Common Era, and CE, the Common Era. You know, that's the new language we use. Now, I've said it before, and I'll say it again, music is a direct experience of grace. And indeed, congregations can typically be divided into three types of people. The first come for the sermon, the second for the fellowship with family and friends, and the third for the music. So you can ask, which one are you? I come for the music. It doesn't really negate the other two because there's always a mix. One is typically stronger than the other, but you can say this about what worship's about. It strengthens our faith, it puts joy and inspiration into our living, and it helps us to become better human beings. So within a few hours, Sandy Bode will lead us in a remarkable recital. I'm kidding. I have to be careful with my humor. But she will show off our restored and refurbished organ. This morning I had originally planned to speak on the history of music, world music actually, beginning in the year 3000, of course, and moving to today. But Joanne Allender invited me over to her home and told me, "You're not doing this." Joanne, as many of you know, she was married to a minister who also enjoyed preaching, the Reverend Dr. William Allender, who served our church here 8 years, 1964 to 1972. And that perhaps maybe people attending worship today might find our time better used if we actually listened not to my voice, but to the new sounds of our restored organ. The wind instrument beats hot air every time. I couldn't resist that. Of course, you can also tour the hot air instrument afterwards. Margie has the key. I was going to talk about organs. Actually, this is off the Wikipedia, and there are 18 pages here. What do I know about organs? Now, in the church I grew up in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin, they have a beautiful, beautiful pipe organ. And it's been restored several times, I went through that process with them. But I know a little bit more about the hymns. And so, since hymns are also a part of our worship, I will talk about hymns. But I promise, abbreviate my original 15-hour sermon to 15 sentences. Who's counting, right? Now, this comes from a source book by Charles Johnson, 101 famous hymns. Why couldn't he leave it at 100? But he places emphasis specifically on congregational hymns because of his background. And okay, I'm going to go now. Don't count that in the 15 sentences. Let's start here. Hymns are composed for congregational singing. Robin, Lowell, are you going to start counting? Okay. Hold up your hymns. Date to the 4th century with the Bishop of Milan. Ambrose, by name, ushered in a great era of singing which lasted 300 years. It was really Ambrose who introduced congregational singing. Gregory the Great introduced Gregorian chants and instituted liturgical and music reforms, which lasted for many centuries. That's five. Unfortunately, chants required trained voices, so congregational singing disappeared until the Protestant reformer Martin Luther reestablished participation in worship by the laity. Believe it or not, through those intervening years, singing and sacraments were removed from the people who became mere observers in worship. Priests and designated trained performers conducted all the singing, while others just observed, much like we would do when attending a symphony or a concert or the Wheatland Music Festival, which took place last weekend, and I believe a number of our members were there, right, Margie and Ralph? And Richard went too. Okay, Richard, anybody else? All right. Whoops. Now I'm... Don't count that. The German reformer Martin Luther not only reintroduced congregational singing, but he wrote many hymns, the most famous of which is "A Mighty Fortress Is Our God." Another Swiss reformer from Geneva, John Calvin, published in 1562 the Geneva Psalter, which popularized the singing of metrical versions of the Psalms. That's 10, right? Okay. In England, John Bunyan, who was famous for his Pilgrim's Progress, continued to debate whether or not congregational singing of hymns was proper. But he finally was convinced by a passage in the Gospel of Matthew, and that relates that after the upper room supper and before going to the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus and his disciples, they all sang hymns. In the Bay Colony, 20 years after the Pilgrims landed in New Plymouth, a book of hymns was written called the Bay Psalm Book, and it became the blueprint for singing in all of those early congregational churches. Perhaps the greatest of all the hymn writers was Isaac Watts. Isaac Watts, who wrote over 600 hymns, including "Joy to the World" and "O God, Our Help in Ages Past." Watts was a Congregationalist and a strong, independent, nonconformist, and his hymn writing encouraged musical departure from the Psalms so as to include various scriptures in the Second Testament. Other well-known congregational hymn writers include James Russell Lowell, Washington Gladden, Harriet Beecher Stowe, and Jeremiah Rankin. So that's it. Anyway, Sandy Bode has a treat for you. And will honor us with her great musical gifts and make our organ sing as never before. And by the way, through Sandy and the talented musicians that we have in our congregation, we have Margie and Rachel, Marge, you know, with your wonderful history. All of the singers in the back, I mean, what an incredible introduction to our service today. That just brings, music brings tears to my eye here at our beautiful church. Anyway, we will all discover a renewed personal commitment to our varied faith journeys as well as challenging and energizing opportunities to support our community along with God's grace, and then we can move forward to whatever lies ahead. Amen.